in our practice, we go, I don't want you to be 100% on that all the time. I love the 80-20 rule. If 80% of the time you are working towards optimal health and following those guidelines of what's best for you, you have 20% to have that deviation. Mm-hmm. No one can have an attainable goal with 100% perfection. It's just not realistic, you know? So if we have steps of people transitioning, the first step is reducing those highly processed foods. Whether if you're eating paleo or not, right? Like, so let's say you're still eating gluten, grain, sugar, you name it. I want you to stop eating fast food maybe 4 times a week and put it down to 1 time a week, mm-hmm. right? Take care of the fast food, eventually switch off. Right. The next thing I want you to do, instead of like Debbie's Hostess cookies, you know, or like, ooh, the bakery has these fresh baked cookies, I'm like, I want you to have better quality. I want you to look for organic with simple ingredients, mm-hmm. with not added chemicals. Those switches first are most important because they're the foundation.
Right.
So instead of getting all the packaged foods, which are usually on the center of the store, I want you to go to the outside where you have the produce and start getting the whole foods, because mm-hmm. it's all about nutrient intake.
Hello and welcome to the Wellness Plus podcast. I'm Karina Rachel, and I'm joined today by Aubrey Steen. She's a functional nutrition therapy practitioner, and she's here today to answer the question, what is the best diet out there? Aubrey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Definitely. So what is the best diet? Is there a best diet? Is there something that you find yourself recommending to patients more than other diets?
Yeah. So this is definitely a very loaded question, because I think that right now, so let's say as just like a normal living human being who's not in the wellness community, all they hear from left and right, from influencers or family members, are like, you know what you should do. We know we always have those people who tell us what we should do. Mm-hmm. And they don't really know us, our body, how we respond to things, what things are attainable, right? So you hear, oh, I want to do ketogenic. You should do the keto diet. I lost a lot of weight. Or you should do veganism. You know, mm-hmm. you should do all these diets. And so a part of our job, especially seeing tons of patients, is figuring out who are you and what works best. What underlying conditions do you have? What is your schedule like? Mm. What is an actual attainable goal for you? All that to preface is that this answer, everyone hates this answer, but it depends on the person. Mm. So there's a few obviously sort of diets that are thrown around more than anything. You're looking at the ketogenic diet, Mediterranean diet, paleo diet, and I'd say veganism. Those are 4 ones that I commonly get from patients that mm-hmm. go, I'm supposed to be doing this. And we can always dive into each one if you want to, but I'd say essentially one of the biggest things that we can do diet-wise is try to think, what protocols can I establish for long-term optimal health and wellness? Mm-hmm. I think we need to stop looking at diets or nutrition as diets, right?
Right.
We need to see how is my daily life? How is my nutrition on a daily basis? How am I feeling? Mm-hmm. So why I said this is a little bit of a difficult question to answer. But one thing that I would say, the most important diet that anyone can do, like if you were a patient at our practice with either lupus or MS or mold toxicity, or just had some hormonal dysfunction or maybe a little brain clarity, we could take you down a similar path if you did not want to get specific, depending on your bio-individuality. Mm. And what that would be is more of like an anti-inflammatory lifestyle. I know that seems like very broad, but one of the biggest ones, I think, that no matter who you are, if you did a version of the paleo diet, you would ultimately be set up for success.
Cool.
Yeah. So I know, very long answer in that one. And I can definitely go into why if you'd like.
Yes, I would love that.
Okay,
I would
perfect. Love that.
And, you know, I think paleo has gotten really popular recently. Yeah. But it's interesting when we have things like veganism and paleo, which feel very, very different, very contrasting. Right. So, yes, I would love the explanation of why you chose paleo.
Yeah. So I think what happens is that most people do paleo wrong. they're told, you know, we should eat like our ancestors. We should be having, you know, removing sugar, which is great, right? But they focus primarily on a lot of animal protein, and they focus on a lot of kind of like even processed paleo foods. Mm-hmm. How we go about paleo is you identify the main triggers. So the main food groups that trigger an immune response, inflammatory cascade, hormonal dysfunction, anything in the body that causes a disruption. And those major food groups are going to be gluten. I have that by itself. It's mm-hmm. a part of grains, but gluten itself is a no-no for every human being. And that sounds like a very blanket statement, but there is not a single person on this earth who would not improve by removing gluten. And wow. Yeah, we're all about, I know that we're always almost like not never 100% in medicine, but we've proven that over time, and we can have like a 3-hour discussion on gluten.
We probably will.
Yeah, right. It's been good. So gluten is one, obviously, and that's wrapped into the category of grains as well. So you're looking at like oats, corn, rice, millet, teff, things like that. Mm-hmm. Very common. Dairy. Which I know there's a lot of controversy on dairy, mm-hmm. But 75% of the world's population actually has a sensitivity to dairy,
wow.
whether you think so or not. That's a whole discussion as well, but I'm happy to dive into any of these. And usually like refined sugars. Mm-hmm. Those are four major groups, but paleo goes a little bit further. The one thing that there's always like this kind of, middle ground of foods that are either allowed or removed. And those are going to be like legumes. So any types of beans, peanuts, things mm-hmm. like that. And then quinoa, which is very interesting. It's a pseudo grain, but if you were to do true paleo, it'd be no grains, dairy, refined sugar, legumes, white potatoes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot. But when you remove those food groups, these are all food groups that are known to be healthy, right? If you had no health conditions, which is almost impossible for America, it's mm-hmm. just whether or not you're aware of them.
Right.
If you were to remove all of those food groups are known to cause like immune response and inflammation, things like that. So no matter who you are, if you remove them, and temporarily, it doesn't have to be forever, you drastically improve your chances of healing whatever is underlying in your body.
Mm.
And you do. There's really no one who wouldn't improve.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then so to compare keto,
yeah.
Can you talk about maybe like differences and similarities between keto yeah. and paleo?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things I forgot to mention about paleo is that a lot of people focus on the animal protein and high protein and processed paleo foods. But one of the biggest things that anyone needs to benefit from is 75% of your diet should be plant-based and whole foods plant-based. So mm-hmm. talking about leafy greens, beets, onions, fresh fruit, you know, like avocados, healthy fats. That's where people go wrong. So you focus on right. a whole foods approach, removing those processed foods that are like chemical laden that obviously are causing oxidative stress in the body. Keto is a very specific diet. It's gained popularity because it does help with weight loss. Mm-hmm. It does help with brain clarity and brain function. And all in all, a lot of people who want to do a reset, keto is good, but they've proven over time that women are a group of people who do not respond well to keto.
Wow.
In the short term, everyone really does, right? Because you're immediately changing your diet. You're usually transitioning from something called sugar burning versus fat burning, where you mm-hmm. start utilizing your internal energy stores instead of being reliant on external, like literally the energy being handed to you.
Right.
So no matter who you are, you're going to improve in the short term on that one. But for long-term hormonal function, ketogenic diet is not good for women. For men, usually it's a little bit of a delay, but men do really well in keto. For whatever reason, men do really well with a lot of these protocols in the practice. They're like, they get the least symptoms of any die-off of any, like even gut restoration. They just do well. I don't know why. Wow. We don't know what. We think it's testosterone and its immune component. But the difference between ketogenic diet, right? The ketogenic diet is basically a very high fat, moderate to low protein, and almost like non-existent carbohydrate diet.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look at, it's very beneficial for things like with neurological conditions. So Alzheimer's, you're thinking of brain cancer, even anything with brain clarity and dysfunction in the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking of type 2 diabetics, not type 1, but people who have blood sugar dysregulation, insulin resistance, glucose sensitivity, things like that.
Right.
More often than not, if ketogenic is really used, so you're not keeping your body in this almost kind of like fight or flight state. Mm. So when we have those excessive carbohydrates and sugars, our bodies are reliant on them and it stresses our basically entire endocrine system. So because we're like, where's that next energy source? Why aren't we getting it?
Right.
So if sometimes my answer is a little broad, so if you need me to go down into anything specific, I'm happy to do so. But
no, I think that's definitely something that I noticed too, which is that a lot of people who say, oh, I'm doing keto or I'm doing paleo, but they're reducing their consumption of plant foods and vegetables and salads. And especially on a diet like the ketogenic diet where carbs are so strictly enforced, you're really strictly enforcing how many you can have. It kind of hurts my heart to see people being like, oh no, I can't eat that vegetable. It's not keto. I can't afford to eat a salad. I already am at my max carbs today. And I'm just thinking there should never be any excuse that you use to not eat more vegetables.
100%. And that's what happens is that people go into these diets and they usually use diets as a short term. I want to lose weight. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. I have a wedding coming up. I need to look my best.
Right.
And what they do is they're like, okay, what's easy? What's convenient? Oh, I can always eat a ton of meat and cheese. Easy. Right. I can go buy some keto snacks 100%. And they don't want to spend the time. And it's not that they necessarily are just opposed to it. They don't know how to. And a lot of times, which they've proven that you can have 2 pounds of leafy greens and low glycemic green vegetables and not get knocked out of ketosis. It's all about your insulin spike and your glucose spike. So if you eat a 12 ounce steak, you're going to get knocked out of keto because protein essentially turns into sugar at some point. Mm-hmm. But it's all about the balance. How much fat, protein, and carbohydrates are you having at the meal?
Right.
So if that kind of makes sense.
Your glycemic load, right? The like collective glycemic effects of all the things in your meal.
Yes.
When you're eating them together at one time. But yes, definitely that emphasis on the animal products and even a lot of times the animal products are highly processed.
Absolutely.
So to take that idea of paleo kind of coming back in here, this concept that, you know, trying to stay away from things that are highly processed.
Exactly.
So the processed meats like pepperonis and sausage, and there's a lot of those out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for people who are trying to embrace a paleo or a healthy keto diet to recognize that those processed meats and processed animal products are really not, I don't know if you would say, don't fit the diet or they're just not optimal nutrition for your body to use up.
100%. My thing is if anybody wants to transition their lifestyle, you have to go at small steps and they have to build on top of each other. In our practice, we go, I don't want you to be 100% on that all the time. I love the 80-20 rule. If 80% of the time you are working towards optimal health and following those guidelines of what's best for you, you have 20% to have that deviation. No one can have an attainable goal with 100% perfection. It's just not realistic, you know? So if we have steps of people transitioning, the first step is reducing those highly processed foods, whether if you're eating paleo or not, right? Like, so let's say you're still eating gluten, grain, sugar, you name it. I want you to stop eating fast food, maybe 4 times a week and put it down to 1 time a week, right? Take care of the fast food, eventually switch off. The next thing I want you to do, instead of like Debbie's Hostess cookies, you know, or like, ooh, the bakery has these fresh baked cookies, I'm like, I want you to have better quality. I want you to look for organic with simple ingredients with not added chemicals. Those switches first are most important because they're the foundation.
Right.
So instead of getting all the packaged foods, which are usually on the center of the store, I want you to go to the outside where you have the produce and start getting the whole foods because it's all about nutrient intake. When your body doesn't have enough nutrients, vitamins or minerals, it starves for nutrients, right? Your brain suffers, your heart suffers, your skin suffers. Everything is asking for more. Mm-hmm. And that's when you see dysregulation. That's when you see, I don't feel good. I'm depressed.
Right.
I don't have enough energy to go run. So I tell people, let's make those steps first, the big foundational steps. Then if you're like, hey, you know what? I realize I'm sourcing my pasture-raised beef, you know, from a local farm. I'm like, brilliant. Is it still 80% of your diet? Now let's cut that down a little bit. And so we make those steps and I go, okay, then let's make one food group go away. how long do you think? I ask every patient, are you someone who wants to jump in all the way? Do you have to remove everything at once? Mm-hmm. Or can we take time?
Right.
Because I would rather take time. Mm-hmm. And go, okay, instead of having Kix, which I don't know if anyone eats Kix, Lucky Charms, or instead of kid cereal, instead of eating Lucky Charms, I did this with a patient, super wealthy, can have the money for private chef, but I was like, we need to do this by yourself. I said, all right, our first goal for you, instead of eating Lucky Charms 5 times a week, let's put it down to 2 times a week. Mm-hmm. But we also need to focus on the mentality of not taking away. We need to focus on the mentality of adding nutrients.
Yes.
So I want you to add this to another breakfast 2 times a week. And is this attainable? And they're like, oh, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, you'd be surprised about mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. hard that switch is to make.
Right.
So yeah, all of this to say is it's all about baby steps. It's all about getting that foundation of whole undenatured foods first and foremost. Mm. Then you start knocking off the inflammatory foods. Then you start looking at the balance of vegetables in the diet and how many nutrients you're getting. Then you can go into specifics like macronutrient balancing and sugar and or carbohydrates versus fat and protein.
Mm-hmm. So. Can you talk a little bit more? You had mentioned a little while back related to ketogenic diet yeah. and type 2 versus type 1 diabetes.
Yeah.
So for people with type 1 diabetes, right. they were born with this certain inability to process the blood sugar the way yeah. that we would normally see
yeah.
Versus type 2 diabetes, something that they actually over the course of their lifestyle, their eating habits, they've mm-hmm. developed type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
So why is keto recommended for type 2 and not type 1?
Yeah. So for type 1, you're starting to, well, okay, it goes into it. I'm going to put it in the bluntly possible. Your liver is dependent on that insulin, basically how you metabolize sugar, how you process that. Your liver actually directly affects your insulin response. It affects how your blood sugar is actually absorbed and utilized, which affects digestion. It's all tied in together. When you have an autoimmune condition, right, which is technically type 1 diabetes, or technically type 1 diabetes is autoimmune, typically there's more factors involved in that metabolism of the sugar. So when you are relying on insulin as an injection and to be measured with every single meal, the shift from trying to utilize your own fat and storage while having that insulin is just sometimes very confusing for the body.
Yeah.
And that's when you can actually go into harmful side effects. Like there's certain things like ketoacidosis, or ketogenic acidosis. I can't remember the formal name, but it's basically like when you're producing too many ketones and you actually become acidic. Mm. It's almost like a harmful condition, but type 1 diabetics are very easily predisposed to something like that. Okay. So it's just such a delicate balance. So for type 1 diabetics, so you absolutely have to manage carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So what I do is slowly take them down and start to go, hey, you're at an excess right now. I know that you know how much insulin can go with that Debbie little Hostess cake, but why don't we start to shift that balance over time? Mm-hmm. And so I teach them how to transition the types of carbs they're eating for the glycemic load and glycemic index. And I teach them how to add more fiber, which will balance out that, and how to balance the fat with that while lowering it over time. So we've actually seen people who were technically, who are technically type 1 diabetics start to reverse a lot of those wow. long-term irreversible responses mm-hmm. for sure. Type 2 diabetic is all lifestyle. Lifestyle, kind of like how you treat your body, what food you're eating, and it's the easiest one to reverse.
Right.
So ketogenic is something that's easier for them to shift away and to start training.
Right.
Yeah. In the simple way. Hopefully that explained a little bit good.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And I just think, you know, kind of going back to the very first thing you said, which is that the best diet for the person is a diet that's been kind of outlined and created to serve what that person's body needs.
Correct.
So this idea that we're going to try to be like, oh, you know, I'm shaped like a square, but I'm going to go fit myself in the little circle hole.
Yeah.
Is just really... Not only is it super frustrating and leaves us feeling really overwhelmed and confused and disempowered because we're trying to fit ourselves into the wrong shaped, you know, thing, but letting people really feel that they can be in charge of listening to how foods feel in their body mm-hmm. or how they feel when they eat a certain way and use that to kind of help guide them toward what is their own ideal diet.
Absolutely.
And so maybe sometimes, you know, they're exceeding the carb amount that's mm-hmm. allowed on their keto diet, but they realize they feel so much better
yeah.
when they eat that way. And so you kind of let yourself have a little bit more control over whatever diet or food guidelines that you are taking on.
Right.
Rather than feeling like you are, you know, maybe a slave to those guidelines.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I just see people feeling so frustrated
yeah.
trying to fit in the guidelines that have been outlined for them. Or like
right.
you'd mentioned the diet that somebody recommended and their yeah. favorite YouTuber does this diet. So I'm going to do it. So to kind of like when you feel that frustration and that confusion, right. let go of those different restrictions mm-hmm. that are kind of preventing you from just eating the foods that really your intuition will kind of guide you to want to eat.
Right.
Maybe start listening to your cravings. Mm-hmm. A little bit. And as you transition away from those highly processed foods with all those crazy ingredients and yeah. MSG and different chemicals that the body doesn't know how to handle,
mm-hmm.
you'll realize how much better you feel eating those natural foods.
Right.
And then for me, that actually became the impetus to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to start trying to eat more of these foods
yeah.
like this because I actually feel really good
yeah.
after I eat this meal with a lot of vegetables in it versus
right.
something with a lot of, you know, enriched flour and white bread and pasta and
yeah.
a lot of the foods that most of us just kind of grow up eating.
Right.
But when I was learning about enriched flour, yeah. I just have to say, I was like, wow, it seems like taking all of the fiber and the nutrients out of the grain would be really bad for people.
Right. No.
And then over time, it's just become more and more so.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the refining of the sugar, yeah. the refining of the flours that just make these foods that are already difficult for the body to digest,
mm-hmm.
be almost impossible for the body to digest.
Yeah.
So I love your tip about replacing those with the healthier versions.
Yes.
And kind of this little stepwise thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what if we just started making this one little switch or one little change?
Yeah.
And yeah, letting people know that your diet is not supposed to be for a finite amount of time.
Exactly.
You know, ideally speaking, you should be able to find a way of eating.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just letting go of the word diet is really a big
yes,
thing.
Absolutely.
Finding a way of eating that makes you feel really, really good.
Yeah.
And when you find it, you're going to find that you also have all the energy that you need to eat that way because of how
right.
good it makes you feel.
Yes. Yeah. So you have these foods that have MSG and preservatives and added sugar. The food industry, which is an entire rant on them on their own, has designed these foods to make you dependent on them.
Mm.
You also think of the rapidly absorbed. So if you were to take like a whole grain, like an actual whole grain, like a piece of rice or like, you know, I don't really like corn, but like millet or something that's been even prepared properly. You have the fiber, you have all the vitamins and minerals and nutrients. It's going to be absorbed and digested differently. If you take that versus the enriched flour of what you're talking about, which is most good,
mm-hmm.
and you think about how rapidly is that going to be absorbed, the enriched flour immediately. You don't even need stomach acid to break that down. You can start breaking down carbohydrates in your mouth with your saliva. You can't do that with fat and proteins.
Mm.
It starts a process, but you could fully break down something in your mouth with carbohydrates. So you all of a sudden you have A, these chemicals that are making you addictive, but then you have to think about how is it being released in the body. When you have that enriched flour or processed carbohydrates and sugar, it immediately is absorbed and you get this energy spike. You get this glucose response. You're like, whoa, I'm in. That's why kids, you don't give them sugar because they just run around, you know, or adults with Red Bulls or things like that. Or like, I got to have my cookies. That alone also creates a dependency because your body has a dopamine hit. It creates this reward system with that food.
Mm-hmm.
So when people start transitioning their diet, not everyone feels better at first.
Right.
They grow through withdrawal. They can go through a natural die-off depending on the fungal or bacterial overload in your gut. Or overgrowth in your gut. And so when you start eating healthier, what happens is the body just goes, oh, okay, we're clearing up some of these toxins, bad chemicals. My body can start to do the job it's supposed to do. So sometimes you see the immune system ramp up and start to maybe target some of that yeast overgrowth, or you see it starting to purge toxins from stores since you don't have so many circulating ones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a transition where I tell someone, like, you may not feel good. And you may not feel the benefit yet, but please
right.
trust me. And I have so many patients. Sometimes it takes like 2 or 3 months. I'm like, I know you hate me right now. Please trust me. I promise. And you get those consults that like make you well up that they're like, you were right. this is the first trip I've taken without pain, or wow. I was able to keep up with my kid.
Yeah.
And now I feel it. And then it's not really until you feel like eat that food again that you notice how harmful it is. Mm-hmm. I like the mm-hmm. metaphor of like, I don't know if you have a sibling or not, like a little brother, little sister.
I have a half older sister.
Okay. So you're sleeping with like a little brother.
She's just the top.
Oh, she is.
Sorry. She's
so silly. And I went, oh, really? Just seem like a little sibling or like a nail, like someone they're babysitting, you know, when they poke you, they're like, hey, hey, hey. When you're used to it, you're like, okay, they're poking me. Like, I'm just going to ignore them. Right. Over time, though, you always snap. You're like, okay, enough. Mm-hmm. I'm done. That's how the body is. So it doesn't necessarily understand that when you remove that tapping, that it's gone away. Until all of a sudden, the kid goes away. And then they come back and they poke you and you're like, I said enough, you know,
yeah.
No, don't hit children. But you know what I mean? That's just fanning. I love kids. But it's all about, you don't realize the trigger, how bad the trigger was because you were used to it.
Right.
So then once it's gone and you bring it back, 95% of the time, a patient who never had a reaction to that food before actually feels a reaction.
Yes. So that's kind of the idea with like elimination
yeah.
diet, right?
Yes.
Like, okay, we're going to take these things out of the diet yeah. and then see how you feel
yeah.
when you start to reintroduce it.
Yeah.
I had somebody just recently who she's been vegan for about a year.
Yeah.
And then she was like, yeah, you know, I tried a Popeye's chicken wing, something that I used to eat all the time.
Yeah.
And she said it just made her feel so horrible. Mm-hmm. She's like, I couldn't believe that I used to eat that. And
yeah.
I couldn't believe why it was having such a bad effect on me.
Yeah.
But it's like exactly what you were saying.
Right.
Like, she took those foods out of her diet for a certain period
right.
of time. And then when she had like a couple bites of a chicken wing or something,
yeah.
she was able to really see how it affected her. And now I think she'll probably never eat that again.
Yeah.
Because once you start to notice how the foods affect you, that is a really, really great motivation to avoid the foods.
Yeah. And the body knows how to be, knows how to blunt that response over time, right? Like, our nervous system, if we were attuned to everything that happened in our body, we wouldn't be functional. You think right now, if we were sitting here and I could feel my hair, but also every particle of clothing, really everything, nervous system would be so overloaded. It's the same thing internally. The body knows how to be like, okay, I don't want your attention on all these 10 million things that's going on. Let's focus on like two or three right now.
Yeah.
So when you start to remove some of those, the body starts to relax and then the body starts to be fine-tuned. So when you bring it back, it lets you know, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're good.
Mm-hmm.
I want it gone.
Definitely.
So an elimination diet's a really good way if anyone wants to see, like, without seeing a functional provider, what do I react to? Elimination diet is great because it removes most of those trigger foods, gluten, grains, processed sugars, refined foods, things like that, that cause those responses.
Would it work for somebody to kind of eliminate just like one food group at a time?
Yeah.
Like, let's see what it's like to do 3 weeks without dairy.
Yes.
And then see how the body reacts. And then, okay, let's do 3 weeks without gluten and
yeah.
see, rather than like all of them at one time.
100%. And I love that too, but I ask, give it time. So the half-life of an IgG and IgE, so sensitivity and allergy response, is 3 weeks. The full life is 6 weeks. So for any patient, I basically go, give yourself 3 weeks without that food. Because you've drastically lowered that immune response.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to be reactive the second you bring it in. Obviously, 6 weeks would be best, but you have enough of that half-life gone by the 3 week point that you're able to determine how that food makes you feel. And I like the one thing at a time, because if you change nutritional protocols, if you change foods, everything else should be stationary. You don't want many variables. You want to keep the platform or the foundation the same.
Right.
So let's say if like, I want to see if gluten affects me. Don't change anything else, because you could be removing gluten, but then adding vegetables and you don't know which one was causing
you
the
good. Too many confounding factors.
Yes,
and you
absolutely.
Can't actually tell which of the factors is that's making the difference.
Yeah. So if you're going for that isolation, I'd say 3 weeks at a time per food. And just know that the gut microbiome changes within 72 hours.
Wow.
So give yourself time. So if you bring back gluten, it may not be immediate. Usually within 30 minutes, if you have a reaction, it's most likely an allergy. If you have it up to 72 hours, it's most likely a sensitivity.
Okay.
General rule of thumb. And then, so those are actual immune responses. Then there's intolerances, which is a whole different thing, but it's how they're broken down in your body and can you process it? Mm-hmm. That usually I would give yourself 72 hours as well to feel that. But if you reintroduce gluten and you don't feel anything the first day, doesn't mean something's not happening. Mm-hmm. Give yourself maybe 3 days later and go, oh yeah, I got a migraine. Or I don't feel very good. Or I'm really tired
why
today.
Why do I suddenly have a migraine?
Exactly.
Oh, I ate gluten 3 days ago.
Or now I'm gassy and bloated. It's very interesting how the body works, especially mm-hmm. with sensitivities and how you break them down. More often than not, though, if that food doesn't agree with you, you're going to notice digestive components or reactions within, mm-hmm. like I say, 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah. Just going back to kind of what you mentioned a little while ago, that a lot of times people feel worse when they start implementing the changes. Mm-hmm. So part of that, the, you know, dependence that we have on the food, both chemically and emotional dependence on the food and on eating that certain way.
Yeah.
But then also as the body starts to let go of some of the toxins that it's mm-hmm. been holding on to for so long, mm-hmm. that detoxification effect also gives people sometimes just that confusing feeling, like, why am I feeling so much worse?
Yeah.
Now I've started to take these things out of my diet and I'm eating really clean. Mm-hmm. And like, why am I all of a sudden feeling really, really bad?
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, how long should somebody maybe like expect the detox period to last, or is there any kind of indication?
It's different for everybody. It depends on so many factors. How is their gut? How is their intestinal permeability? What toxic burden do they have? Do they have mold, environmental chemicals, heavy metals? How much do they have of it? Because what happens is when you start eating clean, right, your body essentially holds on to toxins and it stores it mostly in adipose tissue. There are some that are water and fat soluble, so they can go in muscle, the brain, things like that. But more often than not, your toxins are stored in fat. And so when you start changing your diet, when you start eliminating some of those, you clear those circulating toxins, you start to pull them out, you start to naturally detox just by eating cleaner. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take any supplements or do anything. Your body naturally knows how to debulk. But what happens is, depending on your body's metabolism, that leaky gut kind of talking about, and your toxic burden, it could be anywhere from, oh, I don't feel good, for maybe like 24 hours to 3 days, to as long as like 4 to 5 weeks. Mm. It just depends.
Yeah.
What I would say though is always be hopeful about it, because it's usually something short term. Mm-hmm. There's just so many factors if someone doesn't feel good as they're eating healthy, that as like in functional medicine we have to look at. But nutritionally, I'd say give it a few days, drink more water. Honestly, try to get moving, mm-hmm. because the body feels safe. So when you start debulking some of those toxins, the body goes, okay, let me get some of these from stores now. And that's what happens, is it starts to dump because it feels safe and it can do that.
Right.
So anything you can help just mobilize that, right? So that, that movement, that extra water, add some, I would say not like fruit juices ever, but green juice, add some extra surge of phytonutrients in there, maybe some added electrolytes to really just kind of help metabolize those toxins.
Mm-hmm. And then just knowing that however many years we're trying to let your body detox from, because some people, when they're trying to change their diet, maybe in their 20s, mm-hmm. maybe in their 30s, maybe they're a lot older and they actually have several decades of eating these certain foods and really pretty toxic foods, that actually will probably take longer for their body to cycle that out than somebody who's getting healthy as a 20 or 30 year old and hasn't been putting as much toxic burden or toxic load on the body.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's dependent on everyone individually as well, depending on, again, what type of toxin, how their body is right now, how resilient their immune system is. We have people who will remove those foods and not feel any different. But because it's, I love Dr. Oob's metaphor. He's like, if you're sitting on 10 tacks and I remove 4, does it feel like I removed any? And you're like, no. Okay. So those four tacks are food. What are the other 6? Heavy metals. Are you living in mold? Have you worked at a chemical plant? Or are you eating do you have the toxic stores just from eating processed food?
Right.
You think of being an industrialized society, unfortunately, all of us have some type of toxic burden. It's impossible not to. the chemicals from that noisy truck driving by, right? These little things on a daily basis, our hand sanitizers, everything, we're over inundated with toxic chemicals. And so everyone's going to be a little bit different in that realm of kind of like feeling better, that is.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. Just to kind of recap. Yeah. So you said by and large for most people, paleo, 75% plants.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And then using maybe some of the concepts of a ketogenic diet, like staying away from the refined sugar, the refined carbs, being just maybe a little bit more aware of how the foods we're eating affect our insulin levels.
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to fill in the blank there a little bit? Or
I just intuitively hear your body. I like take it at your pace and do what makes you happy. If you think about changing your diet and it doesn't make you feel good and it causes stress, then do it at a pace which it would, because you're going to cause more negative effects by stressing your body out.
So
that's what I would say. More whole foods, balance your blood sugar, eat a ton of plants, organic, and get clean sourcing. But most importantly, feel good about your change and do not pressure yourself to go at a different speed that you're not, than you're not ready for. Because every single move you make, even if you lower gluten by one food item once a week for 6 months, you make a positive impact on your body. So you don't need to be extreme.
Right.
You know,
and celebrate every little thing that we do, which I think is also important, because it's so easy to say, oh, but I didn't do X, Y, and Z. Focus on what you did do.
Oh, yeah.
And be really proud of those things you do, even if they seem small. Those little small changes are just the beginning to so much bigger change that we make.
Absolutely. I can't tell you. I have one patient who wouldn't eat a vegetable. And I remember one day he goes, I know. He's like, I hate them. After 5 or 6 months, he goes, Aubrey, Dr. Ube and I are sitting there. We're like, yeah, what's going on? He's like, I ate asparagus today. And Dr. Ube and I jumped off the couch and we were like, yes. But it was such, and we really meant it from the bottom of our heart. We were so excited.
That's a good one too.
I know.
That's like a kind of a pungent flavored one, you know? I think like maybe a green bean I would be excited about, but asparagus, that's a big one.
Yeah. So it's like, be excited about those changes. And I mean, if you change one thing, be happy about it, you know, because that's so hard to do. It really, really is.
Yeah.
But
well, thank you so much for coming on the program today. Yes. I look forward to having you back again.
Yes.
Is there a website or somewhere that people can learn more about you?
Yeah. So if you, so I work at Ube Medical, and it's OUBREmedical.com. I'm Aubrey and it's spelled very similar. So we commonly are like, this is Aubrey Medical. And I'm like, one day.
I just, I actually, as many times as we've been emailing back and forth, it never occurred to me that Ube and Aubrey actually look quite similar, but now yes, that is really fun. Well, I look forward to having you back on the program again. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today for the program. Be sure to leave your comments below. Let us know what you thought about the topics we discussed today. And if you have a question, topic request, or something that you'd like us to address in a future episode, be sure to leave that for us as well. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day. Come back and join us again soon.